Hi everyone, it's Helen here from the Squiggly Careers Podcast, and this is a very special extended version of the Squiggly Careers Podcast from UCoachU live in London in January this year. The event was to celebrate the launch of our new book, UCoachU, and I was joined on the stage not by Sarah, who unfortunately was poorly with COVID, we found out the night before and couldn't be there with me, but instead I had two other brilliant people with me. I had Adrienne Herbert, who is the host of the Power Hour podcast and also the author of the Power Hour book, amongst lots of other things, including being a motivational speaker, so many different things that Adrienne does. And I was also joined by James Routledge, who is the founder of a mental health organisation called Sanctus, which is all around normalising the conversation around mental health and giving people the skills to support themselves. We cover in this conversation their insights, their expertise on the different chapters of the book UCoachU. So you'll hear us talking about the importance of resilience, how to manage your time, how to build a community around your career, how to invest in your self-belief, how to explore and be open to your progression possibilities, and what it really means to find purpose in your career. So I hope you enjoy the conversation. I hope you get lots out of their insights and their wisdom. I will hand it right over to them. Hello, wherever you want. Yeah, I'll go here, you go there. Thank you for being here. We are now going to talk a little bit more about some of the topics in the book and really understand a bit more about Adrienne, a bit more about James' experience and some of their insights that can help us all. So I thought we'd start with resilience because we just spent a bit of time talking about it and maybe get some insights into your work. You both do so many different things. You've got a lot of different challenges with your time and time management. What do you do, Adrienne, we'll start with you, to invest in your resilience? What are some of the things that help you?
Gosh, well, I think, you know, I was listening actually to what you said about resilience, and I think we hear that word a lot, especially, you know, as parents as well, we probably say the word a lot, and, you know, we think we've got to be resilient in our work and in our life, and it's just this word sometimes. So I'd like to think about it. What does it actually mean to me? And for me, I think it's about really being adaptable and actually thinking that in life, there is going to be inevitable change. There's going to be ups and downs, ebbs and flows. Nothing ever remains, you know, good or bad. It's going to change. So for me, that's, you know, when I think about resilience, it's about being adaptable, expecting change, knowing that there might be the route A, but what about route B, C, D, E, F? You know, when you mentioned about being an optimist, I am the eternal optimist. I always think there's a way, you just haven't quite figured it out yet. That's resilience, being adaptable and expecting to have to change.
Brilliant, I love that. Yeah, because I think almost anticipating adversity and then you're not surprised when it might come along the way. And James, with all of your work, like personally, but also the work that you do at Sanctus in terms of mental health, what does resilience mean to you and how do you invest in it for you personally?
I have a bit of a difficult relationship with the word, I must admit, because I think a lot of people see resilience as just being strong. And it's got this sort of perception of just keep going, you know, keep calm and carry on, which I don't think that's what resilience is. And I know a lot of companies want a resilience training, they've got a really stressful environment, so it's like, let's just make people stronger so, you know, they have to deal with more difficult stuff. So I have a bit of a difficult relationship with the words. When I think about resilience for myself, I think about rest, to be honest. I know you mentioned it, I just think about stopping and sharing. And I think for me, having a coach for the last sort of 5 years and having that really safe space where I can just talk and be heard and listened to in a really different way. That's kept me sane, really, and definitely made me more resilient as a result.
And so in terms of when we were talking about those six levels, that coach would fall into that support system around your career. I just wonder, because you mentioned rest, and I don't know, you didn't see because you were behind there, but lots of people put their hand up as like that was an area that they kind of wanted to focus on. What does rest look like for you? Is there a particular activity that helps you to get into that kind of rest state?
I think it's funny, yeah, I heard you mention like active rest. I think you mentioned, I read something the other day about rest not just being sleep. Like obviously that's one form of rest. You know, I've got into rowing in the last year. I love rowing. I find that really rejuvenates me. It gives me a lot of energy. I used to find when I used to go to the gym and used to work out, it kind of made me more tired. Like it felt like a chore, whereas finding a sport that I really enjoy gives me a lot of energy, and I find that very restful. Also do a lot of reading. I don't, even though I've written a non-fiction book, I don't read much non-fiction, actually. I read a lot of fiction because I find I can really connect to that and I can get lost in another world. And yeah, I find that really restful. So there are a couple of things.
Brilliant. Thank you. So maybe some, if you want to invest, maybe, I don't know, get on a rowing machine or read some books. So one of the other chapters is around time. And I thought it would be brilliant as a host of the Power Hour podcast, as author of a book about Power Hour. Who should, else should we talk to you about time but Adrienne? So why, the reason we put time in the book as a chapter was because conversations about, you know, feeling like my time is well spent, or how do I find work-life fit, or feeling like I'm overwhelmed, we often have people come to us for help in that space. Why do you think it's a challenge for people, and what have you learned through the conversations that you've had and the work that you do that can help people with their time?
Yeah, I think time is, well, it's a resource that I think at the moment we've never been more time poor. I think most people, from the moment they open their eyes in the morning until they go to bed, until they go back to sleep, there are so many demands on our time now, and our attention, our energy. I think the ability to actually focus on one thing and to kind of, you know, I talk about reclaiming your time, and that's what, you know, the whole concept of the Power Hour, I say to people, reclaim some of your time before you give all of that time, energy, focus, whatever, to everything and everyone else, because there will always be things there to distract you and to pull you away from it. And so it's quite interesting when we think about time and saying, okay, time management or productivity, or it's not about cramming every minute of every day, every hour has to be useful or productive or used well, time well spent. You know, what does that really mean? I think when we think about time well spent, or, you know, the idea, actually, you can't manage time. You can't get more of it. We can't buy it. We can't get a refund. We can't get more time back. Like, it is a finite resource, and just accepting that as well can be quite, I don't know, if you think about it in a different way and think, okay, if you're doing something that is, that you enjoy, something that's fulfilling, you know, using your time in service of others, it's not always a way of measure. What's the output? You know, and I think that's what we've kind of become quite used to, is measuring our output of how we use our time, how we spend our time, and trying to kind of basically squeeze more out of it, which isn't always possible. So, yeah, I think when it comes to how people can start to think about that and what they can do with that is like really just doing honest assessment and looking and saying, okay, what are the things that I spend a lot of time on that I enjoy, that energize me, that, you know, give me more energy than they take? And what are the things that I feel are, I guess, a drain on my time, or they're an obligation or a commitment? Or, you know, when you feel, if you do feel like your time poor, why? Where is all of your time? Where is it being spent? So really kind of assessing it and being quite honest and saying, you know, it's not selfish or self-indulgent to reclaim time and say, I'm going to spend the first hour or whatever day doing something for me. It is absolutely necessary. We cannot give all of our time away. And, you know, free time has become availability. Maybe it's just free time that needs to be ring-fenced and kept. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, no, it does. I'm going to come back at you a little bit on Power Hour to just really get into that, to make it as actionable as possible for people. In the book, actually, we talk about time trade-offs and trade-ups, that to your point around finite time, you can't just keep adding stuff in. Like, it's fine to want to achieve stuff, but you have to sometimes make kind of trade-offs in terms of what you're choosing to spend your time on, so that you can focus on the things that are important to you. And they're not necessarily like long-term commitments. They're just right here, right now. You make some choices. We've got to make hard choices. So your choice to have a Power Hour, well, I love this concept. I loved it when we talked on the podcast and in the book as well. And I thought, because I said to Sarah and I were talking, and I was like, my Power Hour is in the morning at like 6 a.m. And Sarah looked at me like, you're so weird, because we're very different. But the point is, you have to find the time in the day to find that. So maybe just talk to us a little bit about the Power Hour, how people can make that work for them as a concept with their time.
Sure. So as I mentioned, it's about reclaiming time. So for me, it is the first hour of the day, because for me, as someone who's an extrovert, someone who's easily distracted, someone who loves to talk, that's the only time in my day when I can actually find solitude, because my son is still asleep and, yeah, no one's sending me emails or Slack messages or whatever. So I can use that first hour to do whatever I want. I could go for a run, I could listen to a podcast, I can stretch, I can write, I can do whatever. You could literally make a tea and do nothing. And it seems quite counter of like, you're getting up early to do nothing. But again, if that's something that you need, white space to enjoy, then yeah, that's what the Power Hour is in its simplest form, is, you know, take that first hour. But if people want to think, you know, about, again, why should I do it? How to start? It's like, what are the things that you constantly say, I don't have time for that? Like, I wish I could read more books, but I don't have time. Or I wish I could, you know, get into running, I don't have time. Or the kids and work, and there's all these things, and you won't have more time. You know, we all think that, don't we? You know, oh, I'm really full at the moment, but I'll loop back to you next Thursday, there'll be more time. You know, in like 2 months or next year. And that's for so many people. You know, I say in the book, tomorrow stays tomorrow for so many people. When the kids are older, when I've got more money, when I've lost more weight, when I have more time, we're kidding ourselves. So I really want to kind of, you know, use the word power, because it's actually quite empowering as well to say, I deserve to start my day with something that is, for me, it's going to fill me up. It's going to energize me. It's a priority. So anything that's a priority shouldn't be at the bottom of your list. You've done everything else in the day, the work, the kids, everything. And then whatever's left of you, like, oh, if I have time, I'll do that thing. Put yourself at the top of your priority list.
I love that.
There you go.
Yes, yes, good. Told you, slightly inspires action. So we're going to move and swiftly on to self-belief. So we've got a chapter on self-belief. I think that belief is one of the biggest things that can hold people back from taking action in their career in so many ways, in like managing time, like making a change, and in thinking about their career progression and having difficult conversations. And I just want to talk to you a little bit about self-belief, because I look at you in your career and I see some of the amazing things that you've achieved, like how you've scaled Sanctus, the fact that you started a business at university when you were, you know, right at that point. I sense that you've got a high level of self-belief, so I'd love to explore that a little bit, because maybe you're like, actually, Helen. So I sense that you have, and I'm just intrigued about where it comes from. How do you not have limiting beliefs that hold you back?
And my heart started pounding as soon as you said that.
I do. Yeah. I can tell you. Finally, I've got a stage to talk about it.
No, as soon as you said the word, I started thinking about my mum and dad. Actually, without going in sort of too deep too quickly. But yeah, but I just started thinking about the privilege I've had, I suppose, and just being told from an early age that I can kind of do anything I want. And I think I've kind of always felt like that, really. Not that I've ever, like, you know, done everything I've ever wanted, but I've always felt capable, I think, which I feel really lucky to say. Yeah, but then other than that, I mean, I think it's a bit of like a knife edge, because on the other side of a high amount of maybe self-belief, there's also a high amount of doubt at times. Like, I can still be a really harsh critic of myself. I can set myself really high standards, or be really, really hard on myself. So I think I've had a great privilege to be given a massive platform to go on and try stuff and take risks. And I suppose I've always just had I've got like a weird relationship with risk, really. I just, you know, I'm not happy to kind of give anything a go, really. I don't really mind failing. Like, I fail, you know, my first business at uni, for example, yeah, it was great to give it a go, but it was a failure. It was a flat out failure in terms of a business. But I just kind of followed my instinct with it, really. And I feel really lucky to say that. I think that, you know, that is a real privilege to say that. But yeah, I've kind of always just felt like I could, and why not give it a go? And if it doesn't work, then what's the worst that can happen? Which is a sentence I often say to myself in my head.
Okay, that's quite interesting, actually, about that sentence and that mantra. So we often talk about this this like duality between your inner critic and your inner coach. And what we really want to do is like turn down the volume on the inner critic and turn up the volume on the inner coach. So why in the book there's like 100 coach yourself questions that, like, in the moment that your inner critic starts to turn the volume up, you can ask yourself a coach yourself question to, you know, turn the volume up on the inner coach. So you said there, for example, when like maybe the doubt might show up, that inner critic kind of pops out, mm-hmm. you will say, like, what's the worst that can happen in that situation?
Yeah, and I suppose, I think what I've learned to do though is also value the inner critic and really listen to that voice, and rather than reject it, because I think it's really easy to, you know, maybe there's a part of you that's scared, right? You're about to make a new career move, or, you know, change jobs, or apply for a new job, or start a business, and there'll be part of you that's anxious and scared. And I think I used to try and, like, really cut that side of me off, and, you know, I wouldn't talk about my emotions, I wouldn't be vulnerable, I wouldn't share how I felt. And then I think over time I've learned to kind of bring that part of me in and find spaces where that part of me, that small, scared, tired little boy, you know, give him room to talk, and that can then resolve, and you can feel more confident and able to move forward.
It reminds me actually of, I don't know if any of you come across Susan David's work on emotional agility, and she talks in that book about how you can use your doubts as data. So rather than trying to ignore them or run away from them, actually to sort of acknowledge them, and then, you know, start to, what, you know, why am I thinking like this? What is triggering? What is this getting in the way for me? And use them as some like data and insight, and it can kind of make you a little bit more comfortable when it comes up, because there's some sort of insight for us and ourselves. Thank you for sharing that. Made me think about, what am I doing for Henry and Madeline? Am I kind of doing what your parents did for you? I'll take that away to reflect on later. It's a bit heavy for now. We're going to move on to relationships then. So another big challenge that people come to us for support with is their relationships with lots of different people. And that might be around, you know, how do I build this community around my career? What we might talk about networking. How do I fix friction? How do I have a better relationship with my manager? All kinds of things. But I thought, Adrian, it'd be really good to get your insights in the community that you have built around your career, because you feel like you have so many people supporting and championing you. And when I talk to you, because of the different things that you do in your career, there seems to be like networks that you have in all these places. How consciously have you built that community around your career?
God, that's a great question, because I definitely don't think at the start that it was a conscious choice. Probably now in reflection, I know how important it is. And it's interesting when you mentioned about, you know, your parents, and I guess that feeling of them instilling in you that you could do anything and try anything and then being happy to fail. Because I think mine was probably really the opposite of that, actually. And just thinking, I think I definitely felt as a young child quite, you know, independent, but in a way that was like, well, actually, there's no one really to do it except you. And you can kind of go, well, actually, also we mentioned as well around doubt and self-doubt. And sometimes I think, is your doubt self-doubt, or is it someone else's doubt within you? You know, for example, a teacher or a parent. No, seriously, because it can be that you're like, actually, that person may have doubted you and not think that you can necessarily achieve. And again, we're going right in there. But, you know, back at school, I don't think any of my teachers probably thought that I could read a book, let alone write a book. And for me and my siblings, there wasn't this expectation of us to achieve anything. And we all, you know, high achievers, and it's interesting that idea of self-doubt, sometimes it's other people's doubt, and you can go, actually, you've underestimated me, and that can be quite motivating to, you know, we can have a bit of a chip on our shoulder, maybe, and think, oh, I'm going to show you, but actually, I think it can be, regardless of whether it's a good or a bad, you know, I said I'm an optimist, you can really channel that, and so the question about network is that maybe because I didn't necessarily have that, I've always really, really valued friendships. I've always valued, as I said, I'm an extrovert. I value conversation. I ask a lot of questions. I'm curious. And so it's probably partly my personality anyway. But I think having other people, creating my own family, creating my own network of friends or people that I can, I guess, lean on for support, or people who I can ask for advice, or people who I can champion them and lift them up and say, you know what, you're fantastic, you should go for that. I'm the ultimate encourager. I will be the one to tell you should do it, you should start a business, you should start write a book, you're fantastic, you should go for it. And so in turn, people get that energy and then they're like, actually, Adrienne, you're right, I can do it, and you're great. And I'm like, I know, it's just like, it's this idea of like hyping each other up to the point where that network becomes so powerful that you're like, I can introduce you to that person, oh, I know this person, I'm going to email them now, and you become like a connector. So, yeah, building your own network is really powerful. And if you don't have one, or if you don't feel like you have a career coach or people in your support, you can go out and find those people and create it later on.
In the Squiggly Career, we talk about the concept of like career karma and people helping people, and starting by how you can help other people, and it kind of creates this career karma that just comes back to you. It's not a trade and a transaction, so it's not like I'm going to help Adrienne so she can help me. It's just you just help people, and you kind of engender career karma. Thank you for sharing that. We've got two more areas to explore, and then I'm going to hand over to you to ask questions. So the fifth kind of area, career conundrum, that we talk about is progression. And it's probably the one that people come to talk to us about most. Like, how can I progress in my career? Sometimes that's limited when people think progression is only about promotion. And our starting point is to help people think more about what progression could look like for them. Otherwise, we get slightly stuck on the ladder. And I am really fascinated by you and your progression right now, James. I think it's really brave what you're doing and that you're taking some time out to think. So maybe tell us a little bit about where you are in terms of your career progression and how you're kind of being brave to create that space for yourself.
I knew you were going to ask me this. I started a couple of businesses, started one at a university that, like I said, was just an itch, really. It wasn't really well thought through. It was just kind of like an idea, and there was this naive, youthful energy of just give it a go. We're young, what have we got to lose? Sanctus was then born out of a real sort of problem I was facing in struggling with my mental health at the time and wanting to change that for myself. And I felt really purposeful and consumed by it in a way, to be honest, of just wanting to build something. And then, ended up, because the business grew and we were able to partner with so many great businesses, I ended up running a business, right? You know, you go from founding one to actually running one, which wasn't right for me, wasn't something I enjoyed. It wasn't a job I would choose. And then I've recently gone through a transition of bringing in a CEO and stepping aside, and then most recently moving to a board role in the business. So it's been a massive squiggle, like the word squiggly, I love it. It's been a real, real squiggle. It's kind of been a little bit more considered in the last sort of 3 or 4 years, I think, where I've maybe been a bit more thoughtful about it. But I think I've just like followed my instinct. I think I've just listened to my heart, I suppose, and followed a longing, which is quite scary, I think, at times. And you know, when I speak to people who may be going through career changes, or you know, loads of people think about their career all the time, every day. It's what like you've talked about. It's a big part of our identity, and I think it can be really scary to, you know, to make a move, a sideways move, backwards, sideways, up, down. It's all subjective, isn't it? And I think there's a lot of fear there. And I think it takes a lot of bravery to go for something that you've not done before. So, yeah, it's just been a big squiggle for me where I've just kind of, I don't know, just listened to what I felt like I've been called to, basically.
I think just having the confidence to listen to what you've been called to is a really big insight, because so often our career decisions are swayed by other people's opinions, other people's expectations, like shiny objects, you know, stuff that looks good on paper or on a LinkedIn. And actually having the confidence to follow kind of what, like maybe internally is kind of guiding you, I think is a really yeah, powerful thing. Something like to learn.
I think it's harder though. I think that's the important thing to say, and that's why having the support around you, the network, is really important, because I think it's harder to do that. I think it could be easier to just kind of, you know, imagine, you know, you're an accountant and you're desperate to be a primary school teacher. You know, that's like such a scary big thing, and it's probably easier to just kind of lock in and, you know, and stick with the accountancy, isn't it, than go and do a teacher training course at 40. I've made up that. But, you know, it's hard to do that.
So in the chapter on progression, because I think James talking about something that's actually quite hard to tune into, the kind of that inner thing to be brave. If you're not quite there yet, there is an exercise in the book around progression prototyping, which actually I found really helpful in thinking about, oh, what different things could I do, rather than just like locking onto the obvious ones. That could be, if that feels like an area, that could be useful for you. The last thing I want to talk about was purpose, which is the kind of last chapter in the book before we get advice from all areas. And Adrian and I were chatting last week, and Adrian was like, well, the thing is, Helen, purpose and passion are different. And we chatted and I was like, save that thought. Because I think purpose, we talk about it a lot, don't we? It's a very big word. And I think that the chat that I had, I'd sort of like to replay it a little bit about what is the difference between purpose and passion? Why does a difference matter?
Okay, yes. So I also wrote about this. And I think the reason I came to this conclusion was because the word purpose does feel so big. And so if you're going to tell someone or talk about purpose, then often I think, well, I used to shy away from that because I think it's like, you know, you've got to come up with this profound answer and it's got to be cemented, it's got to be same forever. And as I mentioned before, I love change, you know, innovation, thinking, things have got to always be evolving and changing. And the idea of purpose just felt too finite and cemented. So I think that we use the word purpose and passion interchangeably when actually they're not the same thing. And you can have multiple passions. You can be passionate about different things at different times in your life, but I think the purpose is kind of the thread that probably remains throughout your life, and not just your career, but you as a person, you know, what you do and why you do it and why you get out of bed in the morning. I feel like that will be probably attached to your purpose forever. And it will probably, even if it ebbs and flows, it will be there throughout your entire life. But your purpose, as I mentioned, your passions, you can have so many of them, and you can be passionate about one thing one day and, you know, change your mind. And I think when we were talking, I was saying that often I say to somebody, what you're passionate about is something that evokes a feeling in you. And so when you're talking about it, you might become really animated, you might become really annoyed, really frustrated, you're like ranting about it. I'm like, you're passionate about that. It doesn't always have to be that it's exciting, that passion means that it's something that you jump off a cliff for, or it can be something that just irks you and you're like, I am going to make a change about that because I'm really passionate about it. So yeah, I think separating the two can be quite helpful because you don't have that pressure of like, this has to be purposeful and has to mean everything to me forever. So separating the two. And then if you do want to kind of really visit this idea of, well, actually, well, what is my purpose? And, you know, what things can I do within my career that are meaningful? I think it's really important that you look at all the different parts of your personality, you know, your life, things that you've experienced, and go, okay, what is the kind of impact that you want to have on the world? And again, I know it sounds big, but I do believe we've all got something. Everyone's got an idea. Everyone's got a skill. Everyone has something, whether it's, you know, for me at school, you talk too much. Well, actually, that was my secret weapon as a communicator. So, you know, if there's something that is tied to everything that you do, for me, I know I've mentioned already being an encourager, being a professional encourager, is that something you could do? You know, what's the purpose? And if you find a way within any role, within any organization, or whether you're freelance, whether you're employed, to bring that part of you to your work and to your career, it will feel meaningful. It will feel as though it's aligning with a purpose. But yeah, you can have lots of passion at the same time.
I love that. And there's lots more on that in Power Hour, kind of around purpose. And actually in our book as well, Dan Cable, who's a professor, he talks about this idea of following your blisters, which is, I won't go into why he calls it blisters, but it's the same sort of thing about, you know, these kind of passions. And sometimes it's the things that irritate you that are as powerful as the things that you kind of automatically love. So thank you very, very, very much for diving into the chapters, for sharing your insights and being so open about it. To James, to Adrian, massive thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this extended version of the Squiggly Careers podcast from UCoachU Live in London. If you would like to hear another extended edit, we've also got UCoachU Live in Manchester, where you can hear from psychologist Lee Chambers and leadership expert Drew Povey. Speak to you soon, everyone. Bye for now.